This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
Meet Natural Cycles, the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app that's 100% natural, hormone-free, and side-effect-free. Here's how it works. The app analyzes daily changes in your body temperature to find your fertile window so you can plan or prevent pregnancy naturally. Natural Cycles is a clinically proven, non-hormonal birth control option that's 93% effective with typical use and 98% effective with perfect use. No synthetic hormones, just science. And if you're ready to start family planning, switching from preventing to planning a pregnancy is as easy as tapping a button. Plus, the Natural Cycles app makes tracking fertility easy. You can measure your temperature trends using an Oura Ring, Apple Watch, or our Bluetooth thermometer, which is free when you sign up for an annual subscription. Join over 4 million registered users who are taking control of their fertility naturally. Save 15% when you sign up with code RADIO15 at naturalcycles.com. That's Radio 15 for 15% off today.
Hello everyone, how are we all doing? Come on in, sit on down, let me just sort that webcam out because it's a little bit small. Welcome to a live Q&A session. I'm going to have a bit of a special show today. I'm going to do a little bit of a call-in. I've had somebody get in touch who says they want to come on and share some of their own ideas and theories surrounding the little season of Satan. I have just come off a podcast myself with the Biblical Hitmen, so I'm running a little bit late. I wish I had a bit more prep for this show, to be honest. But I've not really had a chance to get it posted, let you guys know about it. So maybe people are coming in a bit last minute. That's fine, but it should be a good one. The person I'm getting on has been sending me lots of things that they've wanted me to quickly read through before they come on to get an idea of what they're going to talk about. And it looks very, very in-depth about history. And I've skimmed over as much as I could when I could. And I'm sure this person's going to be able to explain it a little bit better than I can. So he's somebody who's basically wants to start his own YouTube channel up. He already has an Instagram where he's been posting information on the little season himself. And without further ado, are you there? Can you hear me?
All good, brother. You're coming through well. Glad to be here, everyone.
Fantastic. Let me just line this image up so we can get you and me on the screen at the same time. There we go. So, Charlie, tell us a bit about yourself. Tell the people where they can find you. And then let's get into this.
Sure. I'm 22 years old. I'm from the UK as well, of course. And I'm on Instagram. That's the only platform I have currently. Red Pilled Apologetics. Of course, a very intriguing name, which is alluding to really the reality that we are awakened as Christians, but we want to bring the realm of apologetics into a deeper understanding of how the Bible, politics, and society blend together. So I like to cover theology, so the Trinity, the creeds, denominational differences, philosophy. I like to cover just Christian philosophy in terms of even the supernatural, not just conspiracy related things. So I like more establishmentarian things as well, just any apologetics, a bit like Tony Costa, if you would. But I like to blend that with the knowledge of a new world order, the presupposition that there are people in power and that the Bible addresses that issue. The Nephilim, I cover the Nephilim a lot from a Gary Wayne kind of perspective. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's it, brother. That's where people can find me. And I hope to eventually garner some more interest pertaining to those topics in their relevance on YouTube at some point. So yeah, I'm in the UK, and I came across Paul Stobbs' channel, and JT follows JC, My Lunch Break. And My Lunch Break was really the first one that opened my eyes. I've always been, my view on prophecy was always the historist view, which is that prophecy does repeat itself. And I still believe that it typologically repeats itself in different periods, especially in the little season on a more larger scale. But the primary fulfillment, when it comes to the primary eschatology, I was, of course, a metaphorical amillennialist. I believe that we were in the rain, and I found it interesting to ponder, even as I listened to R.C. Sproul on 70 AD, I found it interesting just to ponder, Lord, if you came back, Lord, and it's like the lightning from one end of the heaven to the other, people wouldn't have time to write that down. People would not have time necessarily to detail that in the way that we would expect or that we would anticipate. And there's so many ways that could work, and I knew that here. And to be honest, I believed it. To be honest, I believed that, but I kind of rationalized it that, well, there's more than one day of the Lord, so although all prophecy did happen in the first century, that wasn't the primary fulfillment. The primary fulfillment is still yet to come. That's what I used to believe. So that's quite complicated. You may not have heard that kind of idea before, but that was the idea I had. You know, I'd never heard a pastor preach that before. I got that from the scriptures. I felt like that was the best way to harmonize everything. But now, from the last, I would say, from 7 to 8 months ago, brother, it was My Lunch Break that the way that he covered buildings, whether it be Chicago all the way to Budapest, all the way to even Africa in one episode, the layers, the stratigraphal information in terms of only one strata, and you'd expect there to be layers, everything that he covers, it's shot. And then the angels in connected in tantamount with building these architectural designs. All of that cohesively showed me a picture that the 1,000 years, it just confirmed to me that you can't take that scripture to be metaphorical in a sense of its intent. And as I realized that here, I immediately embraced the little season. And then upon accepting it, even before becoming aware of your channel, brother, I was still very confused. I would think about Normandy, the 1000s, and so I just rationalized our modern timeline into the little season theory, as many understandably would. So you can do that, but it is so obvious, as Gunnar Hansen has shown, and actually many others as well, even three, I forget their names, but three of the ones that he referred to himself, have, you know, one says 500 years, the other says 300 years has been added, but they all show that there's a period at least of 200 years where we're told the Napoleonic Wars happened, the Civil War happened, and I put that back about 2 centuries prior. So I put that back basically in the time before Luther and kind of throughout Luther. I put that American history there in terms of as we understand it, because when it comes to names and when it comes to the chronology of these events, you have to trust it loosely, and you can't cling to history. That's what I've learned. You can't cling to it. We can cling to BC history and see how it lines up with scripture. We can do that. I'm a believer in the Apocrypha, so I can see that. But when it comes to these pivotal points of, well, we know it was this date, and we know that it had to be this date, I always ask how. And, you know, sometimes you realize, you can see on Wikipedia, it says it happened at this date, and you try and investigate how they know that, and there's no way to know how they've actually arrived at that conclusion. There's no way. So I've come to the conclusion that there are numbers like 1776, 1666, and even 911 AD, and all of these years are really loosely a mishmash of the same 1000 AD kind of period. They're just a mishmash.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQBar plant protein bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
And there's also, you know, the 10th century cataclysm. One thing Gunnar didn't mention that I feel very strongly is that the event, there was a cataclysm. There was some kind of a worldwide calamity. I think that this took up the period, I believe, of the 1700s and 1800s, personally, brother. And I believe that was a period of, like, you know, if you know the video game The Fallout, if you're aware of that, I think that the equivalent of that could be applied to those times. I mean, some of the things Charles Dickens described, it was not in small pockets of England. It was everywhere. And so it doesn't jive with the idea that the Civil War, the Napoleonic War, and all of these things happened in those centuries. I would put them back to the Columbian period of Columbus, who could have easily been Saint Columba of Ireland, who was a traveller, who was a saint and a Christian author. I mean, you know, because we don't know who Columbus was, but there was a Saint Columba is renowned. And I think that it makes sense that some of these Christian saints, like Thomas Aquinas and so on, is equated with some of the other Thomases. I think that some of these people in this time of prosperity did a lot more than we presuppose and that we read about, that we have accessible to us.
So just stopping you there. So you're quite young. Well, how old are you?
22.
22 years old. You are on the extremely low end of my demographics on YouTube. I'm not going to lie. Yeah. I rarely get anybody around the age. I get nobody under the age of 18 who's admitting that they're 18, any under 18 anyway. Maybe they're lying about their age. I don't know. But do you study history? Is that what you do?
Yeah. So I have a theology degree, an international careers theology degree. I studied that primarily. I don't have anything in history. I'd like to accumulate more in that. I'd actually like to work my way up through that, even before going into ministry, because I do aspire towards that. Wherever the Lord calls me, I've got a long road ahead of plenty of time to consider what God wants me to do. And,
oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
I work in care. I work in the care industry.
Brilliant.
And I aspire to maybe being a Christian counsellor first and foremost. So, yeah, I long to see a day, brother, where conspiracies become normalised inside the average church setting. That's what we need, you know. I long for that division. between us, you know, to fade away.
Well, you know, I do say I want you to get together. I'm trying, but it's we're cut from a different cloth. The conspiracy Christian and the churchy anti-Christian are not.
We're still
brothers and sisters in Christ, but we're not on the. I don't want to say on the level because it's a Freemason term, but we're not on the same plane.
But we have to remember that they've taken these terms, brother, and that's another thing we shouldn't. You know, I want to refrain myself from ever, you know, backing down from using the words God's given us. You know, that's the thing. We always do that, don't we?
Well, when you have 80,000 subscribers, everyone's combing through everything you say, looking for an excuse to call you a shill. You know, so I don't want to give them the ammunition to cut a clip somewhere and say, "See, he said it. Yeah. He's one of them." You know, because they do. That's what they do. But I'm just quite impressed because, you know, someone your age thinking about these concepts is not something you see very often, to be honest. And it sounds like you may have your own kind of idea of a timeline going on here from, let's say, Armageddon to now. Do you want to maybe give your own version of chronology for what you've kind of figured out as best? I know it's difficult. I know it's a tall order, but just the best you can. How do you think it's gone down? Mm-hmm. And where do you think we are right now exactly?
All right. I think that we're in about the 1600s, as Gunnar Hansen would say. Yeah, I agree with everything he said. I agree with everything he said. I think that there's the one thing I would just add is the concept of a mishmashing of history, where they'll take something like King Azur that was here in England, and they'll make him King Arthur, and they'll put him in the AD period. Mm. But I believe as well that very likely was Edward III. So I think that there's also, because if you look at Edward III, I have some interesting information here related to the, you know, the period of the Great Resets, where after the release of Satan, I believe there was a period of time, like in the Metropolis film, if you're familiar with it.
Yeah.
There's a period of time, also in the Maze Runner as well, in a way. There's a time where the devil did rule the world for maybe 100 years or maybe a bit more. And then all of that history has also been covered up. Hmm. So that's also, you know, they've had to cover that up as well. That's why they're promoting Tartaria. Yeah. That's why they're interested. So that's why, you know, Helena Blavatsky and Alice Bailey are talking about the Iberian Peninsula and how there was the land of Scythia, and Scythia was so advanced. And they went to the Garden of Eden there in the land of Peru, and they've got these ideas, right? And so there's some truth to that, if you will. But their loose ideas, they've essentially interloped into that paradigm. That's what I would say. I got a lot of that from My Lunch Break. I think My Lunch Break does a very good job there in showing some of the buildings actually are not built from an ideological perspective that is Christian, rather a secular perspective as a theatre. And I think about Shakespeare in that lens, Francis Bacon, I should say. I believe that was Shakespeare, in my opinion. It makes sense. And those theatres are so advanced, it's not Christian. Not that there's anything wrong with theatre, there isn't, absolutely not. But it just goes to show that it also shows that the millennial reign penetrated all areas of society. Mm-hmm. But to give my history, I believe that the 3.5 years of the 3.5 years of that end of that 70th week was that Jewish-Roman war. Mm-hmm. And it was after the first wound of Nero, and Nero came back. So that, well, I'll just share something interesting with you. One of the most influential church fathers, in fact, so influential, he has a library, he has so many works. And it's Commodian in 260, the same period, 260 AD, the same period of the Libellus Magistrate, which you covered.
Yeah.
That period corresponds very well with 60 AD in that period of Nero, where he also had a Libellus order that was in his reign. There was a Libellus Magistrate in the period of Nero, in that exact period. So I believe he lived in that period. And he said, speaking in the future tense, he said, "Then doubtless the world will be finished when he shall appear, Nero coming back after his death, and he shall divide the globe into three ruling," I don't think the word globe was probably used there in the original, "into three ruling powers, when rather Nero shall be raised up from hell, Elias shall come to seal the beloved ones, at which the region of Africa and the northern nation and the whole earth on all sides," oh, he says sides, for 7 years shall tremble. Now, that happened. There were 7 years after the 70 AD period that correlate very well. You take it to about 76 AD, that there would have been a big coming of Christ again. This idea of first coming, second coming, are man-made terms. We don't find the parameters of that really in Scripture, do we? I mean, Jesus can come back multiple times repetitively in different regions within one decade, and that sufficiently details the language of what Paul was referring to, being caught up with him in the clouds. And of course, with the first resurrection, I believe, was a period of resurrections. You have the resurrection from Abraham's bosom, from paradise, where they went into their bodies. Then you have, I believe it was Nero, there's a report that he saw the bodies of martyrs being resurrected. There, are you familiar with that, Paul?
There's lots of depictions of people who were beheaded holding their own heads and things like this all throughout history as well.
Those depictions go back to the 500s and 600s, which of course is the first century, second
is
century.
Saint Albion's quite a famous one in England, the first martyr. You know, and it's from the well sprung up where his blood touched the ground and all these times.
That's
things.
Right.
Yeah. It's like miracles were happening. But it seems like this was a time of true miracles. It's a testimony to how Christendom just spread so rapidly because things like this were happening. Like people were being beheaded, picking up their own heads, not dying.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
In the name of Christ and like, waters were springing from the ground wherever the martyr's blood would drop. And it's like, imagine witnessing something like that. Imagine seeing something like this. Like, we don't believe in miracles today. We don't really truly understand just how weird things got when this was going down. You know, people who walked with Christ, for example, you know, feeding like thousands of people with a loaf of bread and a few fish. Yeah. And it's kind of like, you don't get what that seeing that would do to you. Like, you don't understand, like...
Absolutely.
It's kind of... And so, go ahead, I took over there. You carry on.
No, of course, and he says here, Elias shall occupy half of the time. Well, that happens. That fits. You know, it fits well with that half of the 7 years there. Nero shall occupy half. Then the whore of Babylon being reduced to ashes, that happened. And we can show it archaeologically. Mm-hmm. We can even show it with 7 churches as well around that region. We can show that. And then its embers shall thence advance to Jerusalem. The Latin conqueror shall then say, I am Christ, who you always pray to. And indeed, the original ones who were deceived combined the praise, and he does many wonders, since his is the false prophet. The false prophet and the Antichrist, I believe, interlap and become each other and are interchangeable. We treat them as if they're completely separate. I believe Simon the Sorcerer, who's the man of many names, by the way, I believe that he came back from his head wound to be Simon Bar Gioria. That's my opinion. And I can't really prove that, but it fits everything else. So it's one of these things. If this period is so supernatural, Simon Bar Gioria, I believe, is definitely Simon Magus, Simon the Sorcerer. And that is also, I think, Prophet Muhammad. I think that's Muhammad of Islam because of the vision where he flied up to heaven. And in 3rd Enoch, we see that he went to the seventh heaven. It's the seventh heaven is he went to in the Quran. Muhammad went to, and the best apologist on Islam, Jay Smith, mentions that there was no Mecca trade route. Petra didn't have any oil or a trade route during the time of the 600s, as we date it. But if you were to go back to the period of Roman occupation of the Arabian Peninsula, it would be the best time to put Muhammad, as Gunnar Hansen
In the first century. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, but this is... People come at me all the time with... mainstream history And they have these arguments, don't they? Like, there's never been a time in history where this has happened, or we can trace back these all the way going back perfectly, and we know exactly when the eclipses were in the past. And it's like, how would you explain that? Without you, if you can't sufficiently explain to me how we can do that, then it's kind of, what do you mean? How do you know we've done that? How can you trace back in time exactly eclipses and say it lines up with this document we have here, so we know we have history correct, when we know history chronology was put together by the Scaliger brothers in the 1600s? It's kind of like, how can you, what, why do you implicitly trust the dates they've put on these things?
Because the Scaliger brothers are Jesuits, yes.
Exactly.
The commissioner for their plan was by Cardinal Wolsey, which in Latin is Wolfie, Cardinal Wolfie. And he said, we will change the history books. He actually said, I think his quote was akin to saying, they must learn history the way we teach it to them, and then we shall control the future generation. So that was that's something you'd say if you were not involved in any conspiracy.
Exactly. And it's kind of, I've seen what you've seen. It's this repetition of events with characters with different names.
Yeah.
But it's the same event, just they've changed the names of the settings. And yes, this would take a lot of work. This would have taken a lot of, like, falsifying of documents, rewriting of history. It is hard. I get why it's a hard concept to grasp, but this is not beyond these people. It's not beyond their abilities or their agenda and what they set out to do.
No, of course not.
I'll give it back to you. Go ahead.
Yeah. I'm just thinking about kind of, I'll finish. So with this one, the website of this is Encyclopedia Romana Gladiators Nera. If I just scroll up, hopefully I can come down. Nero as the Antichrist. If people type that in, it will be the first one that comes up. And it says, as they go down, it says here, not all Christians shared the popular belief that Nero was the Antichrist. Okay, well, of course they didn't, not everyone. But I'm trying to find where it says there's... It says here... Where does it say they didn't all believe he was dead? They believed he survived. Who was the true Christians? I think I'm missing it.
Well, explain it to the best of your memory or knowledge. It's okay.
Yeah. So it says here, some Christians, they didn't think Nero had died, and there was rumors of him in a community in North Africa, also at the end of Jerusalem, that he resided there, and that he had an army that was still in Rome, sieging in. So that idea ties in really well with what we're saying. What are the odds? What are the odds? You know, it's not what you'd expect, is it? And then you have as well the Sibylline oracles, the collection of Jewish and Christian apocalyptic verses attributed to the prophecies of the ancient Sibyl, who identifies herself as a native of Babylon. This is really early. This is going to be first century, second century. During this time where Christians were there in that Babylonian region and they'd migrated into the peninsula of Jerusalem, if they've migrated there. And it says here, Nero has become a resurrected and demonic power, symbol of Rome itself. One who has 50 as an initial will be a commander, a terrible snake breathing out grievous war. But even when he disappears, he will be destructive. Then he will return, declaring himself equal to be God. This woman, you could put her in the period when the book of Acts was written, because there were prophecies and prophets and prophetesses in that period that were, that was the prominent period during Acts. Mm. And she says this. You know, so it's just from that period onwards, if you added 50, 60 years, you would have in that period this being written, especially according to Gunnar Heinsen's theory, you would have it being written then. That is astounding evidence. And I'll just show you, I think this would be good to show some of the resources that I use for most of the information. I don't know if I'm able to turn the camera around here.
Give it a go.
Oh, that's the one. Yeah, so this book is From the Brink of the Apocalypse by John Aberth. This is really good. I really recommend this, brother. And it has here a timeline of all the plagues that supposedly happened, which clearly was one event. And he's not coming from our perspective, obviously. But he details here, as you can see, Great Famine throughout the British Isles and Northern Europe. Immediately, there's another famine that happens. The Black Death immediately happens, not long after. And then it just has a whole list of the plagues, the bubonic plague here in Scotland. And you know what's really interesting about this actually that caught my eye is the official narrative tells us that during the bubonic plague, it miraculously over 50 years to 60 years never passed from the British Isles over to the rest of the United Kingdom. But then suddenly it comes in about 30 years later and they've got the same thing. And yet there's meant to be battles in between with King Philip of France confiscating the English duchy, which would have taken a whole military militia. And then Edward III during this time is just, he's just a normal king and they have a full military. There's no problems with the military. When there was a Spanish flu during that time, the military was on a strike. It was everything was, we can look at that time and we can see a decline in all forms of society, economically speaking. And then we can tell here, this would have been worse, far worse than what we're told. And Edward III, I'll just go to that one because it's interesting.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
So, the reason I bring this up here, Edward I, the first Edward, his father Henry was part of a kingdom that was largely Carolingian and was this huge, it was a huge Christian kingdom that still sided with the military that had descended from Richard the Lionheart. So Edward the First is the first one that disagrees with his father's, we're told that he disagrees with every kind of military plan his father had. And essentially, Edward, he joins the French monarchical duke and he becomes, Edward III, the third one from Edward I, became the King of France. I see this personally as the time of William the Conqueror, Normandy, where in these 1400s, this is when really the real, in the Hundred Year War, that was the real Normandy issue that took place. And at the beginning of Normandy begins at a dated number, which I believe is a distraction number, an occultic number. So it could have been 1311 for all we know, but they say it's 911 AD. 911 AD is the date that they give. The beginning of Normandy wanting to siege the Scandinavian peninsula and their kings, and Edward III, we don't have any good reasons why he became a king of France. And we're told that he didn't turn his back on England during that time and there would be no reason to, even though it then causes a 100-year war soon after he dies. And we're told that there isn't any inconsistency with that. I'll just go to the notes I have here. 911 AD, and this is in September. So in September, September of 911 AD, King Louis the Child, last Carolingian ruler of Eastern Frankish Kingdom. Now, if you've seen the Kings of the Franks, they utilized the Magna Carta practice of showing Alfred the Great's Ten Commandments. They'd literally show the laws, and there'd be a ceremony of it, and he'd be crowned in a very Israelite way, and they all have a similar depiction, of course. I have noted this, that generally there's a kind of vibe about them that perhaps some of these images and connections allude to things about Jesus. I know that sounds very crazy, but I do think that the Franks prior to Edwardian lineage, where the Merovingians then come in, and there's the Normandy acquisition prior to that time that I put in the 1400s, looks like there were Christian kings that were taken over by a French army. And in Normandy, in France, there was a heresy called the heresy of the Bogomils. Have you heard of the Bogomils, brother?
No.
And the Bogomils believed in this dualistic view of the demiurge. They believed that Yahweh was the demiurge. Many of them did, at least most of them, and they believed Jesus. Their view on his crucifixion was the same as the Islamic view. And guess what they did? They aligned themselves with the Ottoman Empire, as we all know. So we have Islam tied in with the Bogomil heresy, a Gnostic heresy, about Jesus not dying on the cross and about Jesus being an ascended master, really, and a guru. And even though the Bogomils did believe Jesus was the exclusive savior, he wasn't one of many. They were Christian Bogomils. They still believed that the God of the Old Testament was false. And what if the French army of Normandy, which means many of North, many from the North, and I want to point out here, I'll just say it in passing, that the Habsburg dynasty of Germany invaded from Norman settlers, and they come from Oslo in Norway, where the Normans first were, hence Northway, the way of the North. And in that land, there is a land called, I think it's, I'm going to try and find the name of it here, and I've got it, I'm sure I've got it on screenshot prepared already. Yep, Ozel. It is called Ozel, so the it is So it is Osel, similar to Oslo, and it's an island on the outskirts of Oslo where there was a Nephilim giant called Toel the Great, a massive giant that ruled over the land of Oslo. And from Norway, that's where the Habsburg dynasty of Germany come from. And that's where the Rothschild family comes from. So you can connect the Rothschilds to a giant that was there in Norway, and that's where Normans went to. They were people of the north, of the northern lands, on the old maps, which today are titled in their name, Norway and Normandy. Well, obviously, they came from that northern area. It's interesting because I'm not sure if you're aware of Olaf Jensen, the account of his journey to the north, diary.
The Smoky God.
Right.
Yeah.
And it shows me that there's unbelievers that are not born again Christians that were part of civilizations throughout history that have been in that part of the world. It doesn't show me a hollow earth. I don't see that at all. I just see hidden lands, a hidden environment with a different atmosphere. And I see that there were lands there where people lived that had their own reset. There was a reset that happened there. And then people came from the north, and they were the Normans. And then they went into the lands, and they went into France. Why? Because of the Gauls. The Gauls went to France. The Galatians went to France. And they continued their religion there, I believe, during the reign of Christ. And I believe that the Bogomil religion, in my opinion, and the book I would quote from to prove what I'm going to say, I believe the Bogomil religion influenced the Norman invasion on Christian lands. The Normans immediately became writers and publishers of all Saxon documents. Immediately. Now, you have to ask yourself the question, why was that edict made that they would, why was there such an edict that they would publish, that they would republish all the Saxon chronicles? And why were the cathedrals of the Celtic Church destroyed? Why were their churches destroyed? Why was the church in Glastonbury destroyed by the Normans? What's the reason for this? Of course, maybe there was evidence that Jesus and Joseph of Arimathea did go to Glastonbury. And maybe that happened. And maybe there was something that we could tie to the millennial reign period that would fit even more with the history and things like Glastonbury and so on. But you can tie the Normans to so much. And the Normans directly are the Habsburgs today of Germany. And it just goes to show you, if the Rothschilds come from an intermarriage that was in the Habsburg family, then why would we presume the Rothschilds have more power than them today? And this is part of this whole Dreyfus affair of it's the Jews, and this is all part of their occult language to distract people, when really it's people that have a Nephilim history and honor that history. And they're aware of it, and they perceive it in the way that Hennah Blavatsky and the Theosophists did, that these were good beings that retained an awareness of who the real God was, this Ein Sof in the Kabbalah. And, you know, that is their view, obviously.
So it's gonna stop, I'm going to stop you there, just getting personal about this. So my second name is Stobbs, and I did some research on this. It's one of the oldest names in the Doomsday Book, where second names were introduced for taxation purposes. And it's from French Norman heritage during it's because during the Norman invasion of the English Isles in the north, Leeds, Pontefract, Newcastle, that region, there's even a road called Stobbs Road in Leeds in Pontefract because of this. That's where they primarily settled. The people who were already on the island of Britain saw the Northmen, the Normans, these Norwegian French hybrids of some kind, whatever they were, and they thought they're really short and they're really stubby, and they called them Stibs, which is Old English for tree stump, and that's why it stuck. So I'm quite short and stocky myself. I'm not the tallest guy in the world. I'm 5'7", you know. It's kind of, and I've that's why I have my second name, because people were taking the piss out of my peoples, basically, because they were short and they had a dark sense of humor back then. And what you're telling me is I'm some kind of descendant of Nephilim genetics from a land beyond the north.
No, not at all. That's not at all true.
Sorry, reinterpret for me. What are we saying here?
No. So I'm saying that word, in the way it's treated, I would interpret that to be that there was an army from the north, and there were people that joined those armies in France, in Spain, in Austria, and they came into Germany, and the Habsburgs are related to so many different people, just like me and you. I have to preface this. There isn't this idea of genetics, where I mean, all of us have, you, if you had 1,000 zeros, 0.1% of RNA strand, where one of those protein cells comes into our DNA, we have something that can be strengthened, and that doesn't change our soul. I mean, Andre the Giant, for instance, that's rare, you know, but it exists. I mean, that's a normal person, you know. It doesn't change anything. There's nothing spiritual about that. What's spiritual is that if you've got a family that has honored the beginning of their origins, and they honor that, and they choose to do that with their free will, then that's occultism as we know it and as we perceive it. And of course, occultism really is about the kind of change of genetics. That, I mean, I watched your video with Vitaly on the gut, the soul in the gut, and how the gut, like with a transplant and whatnot, you know, that's a very good topic, actually, how with heart transplants and transfusions, we can, the DNA can be altered and so on. Free will, human free will. I mean, we are all humans loved by God. We can all be saved. But at the end of the day, there are 100% pure Nephilim on the earth, and Toel the Great, this giant, it seemingly, maybe he was fully Nephilim in his DNA, you know, in the sense that his whatever soul used to be there had perished, and the body that was left inhabiting that was one of these entities that has lived many lives before, because of course demons reincarnate. That's why they teach us reincarnation, because that's their theology, that's their understanding. Because they come back into a body, that their genes become stronger, and that soul of what was there is gone. So I don't want to get too off topic, but yeah, I'm saying that Normandy was a large caste system, where there was a top of that caste system that was from the far north.
Interesting.
Not all of the people, not the myriads of people that ended up being assimilated into that kingdom. I mean, there were people that wouldn't have even known what was really going on, you know.
So you think this was a takeover from the millennial reign into this new corrupted Merovingian type of Nephilim bloodline, 13 Absolutely. Power families takeover of the world, going into rewriting history, establishing a new kingdom, their version of a millennial reign immediately after the Christ millennial reign? So I think Noel Hadley discussed something similar, and it's a lot about Camelot, for example, the tale of King Arthur and Camelot. It's like they believed they were going to have a 1,000-year reign themselves, but then there was this whole red dragon, white dragon symbolic battle of some kind that basically stopped them before they had a chance to have their own version. And that's when Christ came and put an end to it, basically, with the Saxon invasion. People claim that the Saxons were perhaps Christ's army in some way. And I've heard many theories and ideas around it. It sounds like you might know more than me, to be honest, because I'm not a history buff when it comes to British history. But what do you have? What do you have on all of this?
Yeah, when it comes down to Hastings, we have to bear in mind the convenience of 1066. So does any of that allude to battles around 66 AD where, of course, there were Christians, that also Jews that had fled the Judean mountains, that had gone to see their northern Israelite brethren at that peninsula of the world, the coastlands of Isaiah? Because, and again, I just preface this, I believe that the groups, the haplogroup of genetics of Europeans are from Israelites, but I don't believe that the definition of a European is what British Israelists believe. So I believe that there's Southern Indians, as we call them, and there's Spanish people, and there's lots of people that really are actually the same as us, and that those differences are developed through adaptation. But really, Europe actually is the many nations, in the sense of the peoples of Israel, typologically speaking, as Christian nations as well, which bodes very well with the armies from the north attacking Europe, and then they attack the rest of the world.
And the centralization of all of the Gothic cathedrals and the Millennial Kingdom architecture as well seems to be highly focused within there. I mean, I've always tried to steer quite clear of discussing that type of topic on this channel, because it's band bait. You're just going to get called a white supremacist, and it's just going to become an absolute nightmare. I'm not one to follow genealogies or bloodlines anyway, because I think salvation is beyond anything of that. It's
one of these things that I believe it is good to know how, because I'm a fulfillment theologist, of course, but we also know that God will, he will perceive a remnant to represent his faithfulness, just to represent it to all Christians. Mm-hmm. And that's something that's obviously a nice thing to be aware of, but the focus is just the repentance of a collective people. Mm-hmm. And when that happens, then a good government can come in and you know, it can be good for every citizen of the country. So that's the idea. And of course, these cults and movements are all Freemason controlled. I mean, you know, they've got the Black Israelites were created by a 33rd degree Freemason. And when it comes to the Christian identity, I believe that that is Masonic as well, through and through.
Interesting. So, but one thing you said there, which struck me, is obviously 1066. I never put it in my mind that 66 AD is when the Roman Jewish War began. And that would be.
It's
exactly 1,000 years. It's just clicked now. Could you expand on that idea a little bit more, just to see what else you've got to flesh that concept out?
Well, I haven't got much to flesh out in terms of documents, but it's just interesting that's when the Jewish-Roman War began, and that is the climax of the conflict, from 911 AD being the only date we have that began where Normandy wanted to invade. And so it was in September as well. What are the odds? it was actually September 24th. I mean, it's just interesting that this is the case. And I believe, it's interesting because for those that don't know about, I'm sure most of your viewers do, about Michael Heiser. I do not believe this was the birth of Christ. Actually, I go with the 20. I actually go with the Christmas view, brother. I believe that the 24th of December of Kislev in the book of Maccabees means that Christ's birth was actually in that date, and I believe that that's true. But on September the 11th in Jerusalem, there was a sign of the Virgo. And it was a proclamation that Yeshua was coming into the world. It was a sign of the Messiah. So they've chosen that date, 9/11, you know. It seems that has been a pivotal reason that they've chosen
There's definitely something sus behind that whole numerology. I've heard the idea, you know, it's 9/11 is IXXI, which is the Freemasonic square and compass logo between two pillars as well.
IXXI is also the star of Renfam between two pillars of Jachin and Boaz.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. It's two pillars, and you've got the interlocking X's making that logo like that, you know, which is obviously square and compass as well. So that's a classic one that's been in the conspiracy realm for years. They were talking about that when you were 12 years old, I remember.
Yeah.
Do you remember that? But it's, of course, it's, They do communicate through those signs and symbols. But, yeah. but I want to realize they're not really communicating. They're like bastardizing the truth in their own way. That seems to be what the method of these a lot of these occult symbols are. Because everything, I think, even like the spirit realm, for example, it's been occulted to the point where it's evil to consider the spirit realm as anything. When I think, well, it's God's creation. God created the spirit realm. It's just now been infested with parasitic Nephilim demons. So yeah, it's not great. They made it their domain for now, but it's not theirs. They don't own it. And it's not intrinsically evil to be in the spirit realm or perceive the spirit realm. I think a lot of this thing they've done with symbols is the same as well. Things like the pyramid with the capstone, for example, quite an infamous Illuminati pyramid symbol, which is something evil. It's Lucifer at the top, the all-seeing eye of Providence over there. Many layered infrastructure pyramid scheme where it's compartmentalized layers of civilization and secret societies. Yes. Or could it be a representation of New Jerusalem with Jesus Christ being the capstone as well? You know what I mean? You have to realize it's like, I think there's a lot of bastardization of millennial Absolutely. Kingdom symbology that's been turned Satanist. Basically.
Well, I'm just thinking about how, Tolkien incorporated the ire, obviously. Well, actually, the ire, this reminds me of who is the actor that was in Lord of the Rings? He's from a family that comes back to 900 AD, a Roman family. It's survived that whole time. He is the most well-known, one of the most well-known actors.
Is it Orlando Bloom? Is it him or is it the other one?
No, no, no. I can't remember. He's in Lord of the Rings.
I don't know. I don't follow actors. I'm not into famous people or anything to do with them whatsoever. Yeah, I know nothing. You're talking to the wrong guy if you want information on actors. I have no idea.
No, it's... Christopher Lee. So Christopher Lee in Lord of the Rings, he was Tolkien's best friend. He was an ex-military man, and he is from the Carandini family. And that goes all the way back to the Carolingian period, actually. So it's just interesting that he was in that. He has a very important role in Lord of the Rings, and he was Tolkien's advisor to some of Tolkien's themes to how he was going to basically help the movie production follow more folklore, some nuanced folklore traditions that would come into the production. So it's just interesting that he's from the Carandini family that is a Carolingian family. That is no doubt taken over because the Carolingian Empire was all taken over by that Merovingian dynasty. And the Plantagenets over here, of course, had a society called the Priory of Sion, where they were obsessed with taking over the mountain of Jerusalem.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, and that's in the 1000s. Mm-hmm. They wanted the mountain of Jerusalem.
So let's say then, so you think 66 AD... 70 AD, destruction of the temple, judgment of the Whore of Babylon, revelation coming to fruition. Then after that, maybe 76 AD, tribulation style event. We don't know how long it goes on for necessarily.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But then you have the three cataclysms of the first millennium, which was actually one cataclysm, which was tribulation, Armageddon, destruction, and the final war, and then Satan's bound. 1,000 years of peace. Are you saying from that period to 1066? Was a literal 1,000 years.
No.
I think that
would be the 1400s into what we would call some of the 1500s. It's loose. It's some of 1300s, some of 1400s, because you have to. You can't be precise with the centuries because there are things that overlap as well. And I said earlier that there is that 10th century cataclysm is real. It exists. But it was at the end of the 1400s. There were actually worldwide earthquakes in the 1300s, at the very end of the 1300s. But worldwide, it was a well-known thing that these worldwide earthquakes. So some of this mud flood stuff might actually be from that 1300s. And it just gets mishmashed in with the 70 AD cataclysm.
So where do we fit the 1,000 years of Satan being bound into your timeline then? Where does that begin and end?
So that would be 1,000 years. Up until the point that we would call the late 1300s, 1400s, that we would call that.
Yeah. But it's kind of like, but there's been like, so it's kind of 1,200 years technically, but it's not because a lot of that time is been moved around and messed up.
I will concede that it doesn't have to mean literally this precise number 1,000, but it does have to be rounded up to a long period that is literal and that exists on an observable experiential level, because that is the context of the passage.
Yeah.
So if it was 1,003 years, 1,020 years, that is still the fulfillment. So if it's 1,200, 300, even that is still the period of scripture that is being referred to there is a literal prophecy.
Well, I myself wouldn't imagine. I think there would be a slow taper from the millennial reign into corruption. I don't think it would just be everyone suddenly corrupt.
No.
Because people have been living righteously for 1,000 years, you know, let's say a literal 1,000 years. Mm. And they've been living under the law of Jesus and Christ with a fair king and a fair example, living righteously for so long, you know. And there may have been those of the Daniel prophecy, the beast who had to live with extended life through the millennial reign and watch the kingdoms being ruled by the saints instead, or something. Maybe the secret societies developed during that time in opposition to Christ, but couldn't do anything.
Well,
maybe
just,
you know.
Now, brother, sorry to interrupt, brother. Just now, I thought of a Beowulf because there's a theme of dragons rebelling and giants rebelling, and then the village has to take them down. And I did feel when I read Beowulf, I felt. Like it was very Christian, but it's been paganized. Mm. I felt that very strongly, that it's Christian, but they've paganized some of these accounts.
Maybe.
You know, he was a mermaid killer. So it was like that was a common job. And the way it's written, it's just as if I have that in this book, actually. I have this in, it's the Middle Ages myths and what's that word? Legends, yeah. Mm. And it says in there about how he was a hunter of mermaids. And you think, it's just as if that's something that wasn't extraordinary. It was actually more prevalent. So you think that's towards the end of the reign where more supernatural occurrences, well, not supernatural, but that which we would esteem to be supernatural is more common. It's more of a routinely observance and an everyday.
Well, I feel like dragon hunting was weekend sport during the reign, looking at some of these pictures. Yeah. You got, you know, Saint George the Knight with his lance piercing dragons and stuff, and dragons coming out of caves, and it's like, I feel like there was a lot of trippy things going on. You know,
it's funny you said that, because right now you've reminded me, I've got a note here. 15th century, a dragon burned the Basilica of Saint Anthony. So 15th century, we're in the 1400s, right? So here, during the time of a worldwide earthquake has just ended, there's been worldwide earthquakes. And that's a bit different from a bubonic plague. It's a bit different from the other plagues that have just preceded the 1400s. And here we have a dragon burns the Basilica of St. Anthony, a massive basilica. And this is a post I'm reading from a post. It's on Instagram. A fire cannot kill a dragon. Not a Christian account. But nonetheless, very interesting. The fire in Basilica of St. Anthony's Italy occurred in 1420, causing significant damage, not destroying the entire structure. It's got a picture there, an ancient picture of a dragon and the city that was a depiction that they did. And it says, although the exact cause of the fire remains unclear, a popular legend of the time claimed that the basilica was set ablaze by a dragon, as depicted in the engraving above. Incendio Sicurio, and that's obviously in Latin, I presume, dated... And that picture is dated 1752. So just before the 1800s, where the history starts to get changed in the schools and whatnot. And so we also lose a lot of the libraries, don't we, in the 1800s. So it's interesting. There's just one example there of a dragon burning a basilica.
Mm. Well, I think we have plenty of examples of odd creatures. We have the Blemmies as well, the chest-headed people. You got the Cylocephali, the dog-headed men as well.
That's the Mappa Mundi. The Mappa Mundi map, there's this face and the stomach. That's I think I have a picture of that here. The Mappa Mundi. That is very strange, brother. I think that it clearly shows to me that there was a Pangaea, as you said before. I know I'm reiterating points you've covered on your channel, but there's cathedrals in India on this map, and also in Africa as well, right? And you think, where are they today? Why can't we visit those? I mean, where are those ancient cathedrals that are depicted as a castle? I'll just turn this around. You can see here the Mappa Mundi.
Yeah.
And you can see it's all the lands were connected. I know it's not a very clear picture. I do apologize for that. There is a mountain in the middle. And that map actually was destroyed in an ally bombing, decimated the only church in Germany that had that map, and the Allies obtained it after World War II. So yeah. It's interesting.
There was a lot of decimation of European architecture during those wars. A lot of history erased. You can reinterpret a lot of these events now as attempts to cover up the past, you know, more than anything.
Yeah, and that map is dated 1300. Mm-hmm. So I believe that after 1300, after that year, if we'll grant them that year, that's when you've got these resets. You've got earthquakes, you've got a plague here. And then you've got Edward III, who's the King of England, becomes King of France, but he didn't turn his back on England. Nothing happened there. I believe that's when you've got Normandy coming in. And this is what I wanted to cover, the Great Schism. This is a big topic. The Great Schism, we're told, in the 1100s that happened. That fits with the 1400s perfectly. And I have a photo for that, actually, about how I believe that the Great Schism essentially involved Christians on either side that were opposed to each other over way more issues than the Filioque Clause. You know, we're all told the Filioque Clause is just, it was so impactful that it caused this ecclesiastical division. And do we really buy that? You know, that's the official narrative. I believe there's much more to that, relating to Normandy, relating to succession. The Bogomils in France were claiming that there was no succession left, and then the succession office they wanted to take over, and the Bogomils would appoint people at large on a regular basis to be new deacons, and they were known for spreading this way. It's almost, it takes blind faith to believe that the Roman Church and even Constantinople has remained completely free from God allowing the devil to put the Cathars, the Albigenses, and the Bogomils in their ranks.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't want to get denominational. I am an Anglican. If I had to put myself under an umbrella, I like Anglicanism, theologically. But Yeshua is beyond denominations. We're born again believers. We believe the Bible. I believe there's good things about, I'm going to say it, this might be controversial for some. There's things, the narrative that's very anti-Catholic is also a controlled psyop in a sense. What we call Catholicism today is really remnants of things that are in a disorientated manner where it's not associated into the right frame of view. Like with the saints, I believe that the saints do pray for us, and I believe in a form of intercession that like the Lutheran view, the Anglican view. But I, of course, I don't believe in saying, Peter, forgive me, Peter, come down and help me. You know, I don't believe in rewriting the Psalms and putting Mary into the Psalms like Pope Leo did, you know. But this makes sense if you understand that there was a presence of the saints often in society, mm-hmm. and that there was a communication of some kind that did happen. Even if it was rare, even if it was once every year, there was an event that people spoke about in villages. That still is the reign of Christ. You know, we're not presupposing anything. Oh, we're not saying it has to look this way, it has to look that way. We're not saying they showed up every week, they showed up every 5 months.
Well,
no.
Well, did you see Nicolette when she came on a call on like a call-in show like this? She has a channel called Biblically Based, small YouTube channel, just started it. And she basically presented some research she was doing on the saints. And she came to the conclusion, she'd been looking at like basilicas and churches and cathedrals everywhere. From the Orthodox all the way down to like isolated places in the Honduras, let's say, just everywhere, you know, all over the earth, wherever it is, where you find these cathedrals that have saints painted on them.
Mm. Yeah.
And they all look the same. Like they may have stylistic changes, but you can tell that's Peter instantly.
Yeah.
They all look identical. And it's kind of how? Because a lot of these places by official narrative would never have communicated with each other. They wouldn't have known how they painted their fresco versus how they painted theirs.
That's a very good
and it's
point.
Not about it's because they literally saw these people regularly, like, and they knew what they looked like, and likely were depicting the same people they were actually seeing with their own eyes. So there's no mistaking who was who. You know what I mean? You could tell immediately who Paul was versus who Peter was, and they all had their own distinct looks. You know what I mean? And it's kind of, and it, the way she breaks it down is really fascinating. She shows the different paintings. It's kind of like it's there, and it's kind of people. Well, it's like the depictions of Christ being identical everywhere, practically as well. It's kind of how is this happened?
And it matches. You know? And it matches the Shroud of Turin. It matches the Shroud proportionately. I just wanted to say that. I know there might be different opinions, but I believe the Shroud personally. I'm inclined to. If that's a deception, then, you know, it's tricky to. I mean, I believe it. I personally believe it's a true tradition because, actually, in the Trojan War, there was a war before the First Crusade over that, and obviously it was part of what the Templars wanted. If the Templars wanted that relic of the Shroud, makes sense they wanted to destroy it or corrupt it.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe this tradition is true, and it just so happens that the Shroud matches all these depictions. It matches them perfectly.
Well, exactly. But it's not only that. I mean, do you remember exploring Tartaria's videos, who kind of broke this theory on the internet for the first time? And she was talking about Tartarian kings, or stuff like this, or the kings of Tartaria. And she was basically just going through European images of very famous kings. And they're all the same. They all look like Jesus, as we would have depicted him as a middle-aged man. Not young 33-year-old Jesus, but like 50-year-old Jesus. You know what I mean? Ruling with a rod of iron and this other thing in his hand with a crown. It's kind of... And they're all been equated to famous characters throughout history, famous kings throughout history, you know, but
yes,
it's kind of, why do they all look the same? Why do they all look like the same king over and over again if they're supposed to be different kings separated by hundreds of years each? And it's kind of, is it possible that this was Christ? This was the king of the millennial reign. He was the king. He was everywhere doing his rounds in every city and everything all the time, you know, along with his saints doing the exact same thing as well, a physical walking on earth type of reign. And a lot of people say, though, I don't know how you square this one, because it is a relevant statement. It's kind of, you know, Christ says, you know, the kingdom isn't observed with eyes. It's not observed. It's within, the kingdom's within. It's kind of, how have you kind of squared that with this aspect of there being a physical reign as well, not a spiritual concept? I mean, I think I've interpreted that as, and maybe this is me doing mental gymnastics to fit the theory, I don't know, or maybe I'm going to be being honest, but I've always interpreted it as, yes, the kingdom is within. If your heart is not aligned with the kingdom of Christ, you have no place in it. That's kind of what I've always seen it as. That doesn't negate that it's also going to be a physical thing. That's my interpretation of what he meant there.
Well, I think about when Jesus says, my kingdom is not of this world. So the term of designates that it starts with an uprising of war where there is colonization and conquering and military economic power, a siege of power, where an economy is taken over by different groups. And so obviously Jesus's kingdom is not obtained by thirst for power, lust, which is common with the thirst for power, with humiliation of another tribe. None of these things are implied. It's not of the desires of men. It's not of our depravity. It's of heaven. It's of his desire. It's of his will. And also, it is, I mean, if you think about it, if you understand about like the, if you think about the tradition in Ethiopia, where when they were asleep, there were angels that were seen that would build the temple of the cross in Ethiopia, and it was almost like a night shift where the angels were known. It was a tradition that they'd wake up and there's more that's been built, and they were the builders of that. And there's a tradition that's stayed there amongst Ethiopian Christians that the angels built that ancient church that is sedimented into the layers of rock there, and then there's a cross that comes out of the ground. You've seen that, and so that right there is not a human work. Just as you say, brother, that you feel that this channel was nothing that you've done with buildings, with cities, with it's just all of God. It's of the angels. I believe that it's also of miracles, miraculous. I think right now of George Muller. I know it's a bit random, but the miracles that enabled his orphanage industry to survive. And I think about these stories, and I think, you know, those are the kings of that millennial period. that's kind of how society was revitalized in a positive sense. A collective community peacefully coming together. And there were times of self-defense in conflict. But the enemies often came to Christ. So, that is not a kingdom of this world. I mean, that's Rome or Babylon or Assyria or Egypt has nothing in correlation or congruency with that description, does it?
Mm.
So I see that as very spiritual, brother. So I think, yeah, I think that we've hit the nail on the head with squaring that one.
Fantastic. Well, I'm showing the people on the screen now your Instagram.
Yeah.
Is that what you want people to see? I'm going to share the Instagram link in the chat.
Yeah, okay.
And I will also add it immediately after this show to the description as well. But do you want to just let the guys know, because we are coming up on my time limit right now. I'm going
okay,
to get going.
Sure,
but if you want to let the guys know where they can find you, I'm just going to quickly try and post this in the chat if it'll allow me. It's not really allowing me for some reason. If anyone wants to, any of my mods want to help me out here, go find Red Pilled Apologetics and share the link in the chat. It's not letting me paste it for some reason. Oh, it is. There we go. It's through. So I've linked your Instagram in the chat there. I'll put it in the description
of
the video. But if you could also just, share anything you want to know, where people can get you, what your plans are for the future. Are you going to start a YouTube channel? Let me know how that's going to go.
Yeah. Well, brother, my plans are what God wants them to be. And it's difficult at my age to actually garner this. It's difficult to navigate how to express this. And I was anxious before coming on, and because I've never done this before in terms of a YouTube stream. But I can honestly say, all glory to the Lord Jesus Christ, that God is so good and merciful, and his word is so simple. If you believe his word, you just come to this conclusion. And I would encourage anybody that's skeptical, stay skeptical, but also remember that the God who dictates history has showed you a supernatural history from Genesis all the way to Revelation. And so why can't history be more supernatural than you expect? That's what I would say. That's my message. That would be my message for your viewers, brother. And apart from that, I just wanted to say, Paul, thank you so much, brother. It's been a real honor and a privilege. And I can't wait to watch this back. And I'm sure there'll be things that will come to mind that I should have covered. But it's been God. You know, we have to take things one step at a time, don't we? And I do apologize sincerely if I've not let you chip in on some points. And this is a habit I have, actually. I have Asperger's and I overload.
You did really well, especially considering you have Asperger's, actually. I've had guests on who are completely neurotypical, who have a terrible time of it. And you've done really well, Charlie.
Thank
so you should be proud of yourself on that one. I think
people
have really enjoyed the talk. Everyone in the chat's going wild. I told you when we started, it's just me and you talking. Take your time. Do not look at the numbers. But we've had 500 people listening to this.
Praise God.
Just letting you know now. Wow. Okay. So hopefully they will get to you. Your link is pinned in the chat. Again, I'll share the link in the description of the video as well. I'll even make a comment below the video sharing the link too. And I'll pin it to the comments to get people to you. Charlie, I really, really think you need to start.
Thank you.
I really think you need to start a YouTube channel. Okay. And I think you should get on camera and share what you found and what your thoughts are. And we have a great community on Telegram. We have there's a Discord as well, community that's just started. We are all in this together, and I can guarantee you will be a welcome addition to the team if you want to get online.
Absolutely.
And start sharing your voices. And it's nice to have, you know, some young blood in the game, shall we say, because, you know, I'm old and tired. So it'd be good to have more people doing this, and as passionate as you are, and obviously as educated as you are as well, you clearly know your stuff more than me. I don't know why I'm the guy who has 80,000 subs.
No,
you should have
no.
them, to be honest.
What one of the things that God did when it came to this topic is he brought things to my mind. Whenever my lunch break would say something, he'd bring something else to my mind that is not even related to the topic. This is what God does. It's my mind is very sporadic, and I, if one thing I'll say is this, it's worth being sporadic like this and making a few mistakes and admitting that they might be mistakes, but then getting the bigger picture correct and seeing what the scripture says, believing the scriptures, than presuming the timeline that we've been taught, mm-hmm. presuming futurism and adding in 2024 years. It is easier to utilize the method I've shown, and that is my testimony and Paul's testimony, so it's worthwhile considering.
Yeah. One thing I will say, if you ever do join the YouTube game, be prepared for the backlash and the trolls. It can be tough. There's always going to be people out there who are not going to like what you're saying. Yeah. Obviously, it comes with the territory, especially when you're getting into the conspiracy realm. But I would say, like you said, your faith is strong. You're clearly on fire for Jesus, which is great, and for the Lord, which is wonderful. I think you can go really far, Charlie, to be honest, and I think you'll have a good time of it if you do get on here and start sharing the information. I'm glad you called in. I'm glad you're passionate, excited about it. And one thing I'll say is, do not dilly-dally on making that YouTube channel. Just start it. Just do right. it now. After this show, in fact, make the channel. And like you said, right, it's best to fumble around and make mistakes and do something than never do anything and constantly plan. Okay? It's always better to do something bad than to do nothing at all, because it will only get better. All right, that's yeah. you follow your own advice. That's all I'm gonna say. It's good advice. And on that note, guys, we're gonna leave it there. Thanks again, Charlie. I really appreciate it. Thanks for everyone in the chat.
All right. God bless everybody. Thank you, Paul. God bless, brother.
That's right. God bless.
All right. God bless.